I am very grateful to be with all of you this evening. Special gratitude to His Holiness Chandramali Swami Maharaj, His Grace Vyaski Prabhu, my dear friend Sridharji. Damodar Reddy has come from California. And to each and every one of you. We have been discussing here at Govardhan Krishna's very beautiful pastime of lifting the Govardhan Hill with the palm of his left hand and holding it for 7 days and seven nights. At that time, Govardhan Hill was far bigger than it is now. It describes in the scriptures that when Krishna lifted Govardhan Hill, the peaks of Giriraj were penetrating outer space. But when Krishna left Vrindavan for Mathura, the Yamuna River, which is so wide and so deep and flowing so strongly, became like a trickle. And Govardhan Hill, it describes by Sanatana Goswami, its peaks in separation started falling to the sides of the mountains and crumbling, and as a whole, it sunk deeper and deeper into the ground. And for those of you who perform the Govardhan Parikrama the day after tomorrow, you'll have some idea of how big it still is. It's about 23 kilometers. But why is this pastime celebrated with such emotion, love? Because compared to other objects that the Supreme Personality of Godhead lifts, Govardhan isn't really so much. Varaha Dev lifted the entire Earth planet. Ananta Dev has universes on his head. Arunodakshay Vishnu, simply by his exhalation, universes are pouring out of his pores. They pour from his pores. But what is so beautiful about Govardhan Lila is Krishna did it so playfully, so sweetly. As he was lifting Govardhan Hill for those 7 days and seven nights, all of the cows, all the gopas, all the gopis were gathered underneath. He was playing his flute very sweetly, enchanting their hearts. He was personally reciprocating with each and every one of them by his glances. The gopis Krishna entered through their eyes into the very core of their hearts, and he embraced them and they embraced him for 7 days and seven nights, just through their eyes. Krishna in Vrindavan, he killed so many demons, and they were very powerful. There were some asuras at the time who had gigantic militaries that fought against Krishna. But the particular ones that went, that came to Vrindavan were so powerful, they didn't even need militaries. They had such supernatural cities. They could change their form. And single-handedly, they could destroy entire militaries. Putana. Trinavarta. Keshi. Aga. Arista. These were the most powerful beings in the universe. And we read so many various incarnations and scriptures of how Bhagavan kills demons. It's usually a very, very exciting battle. When Ram slayed Ravana or Kumbhakarna, it's pages and pages of warfare. But Krishna, when he's an infant child, he effortlessly, playfully kills Putana. When he's hardly 1 year old, he's carried into way, way into space by Trinavarta. And Krishna very playfully just hugs him by the neck and squeezes and smiles and chokes him. Aristasura, he was such a big bull. He wasn't actually a bull. He was a demon. He was an asura. He was a rakshasa. But he could assume the form of this bull. The hump on his back were in the clouds. And as he was galloping, the entire earth was trembling. Now, I was speaking with my dear friend Damodar Reddy just this morning. He's one of the foremost inventors of cash. What is it? Chips. Memory, cash memory chips. And he was trying to explain to my very unscientific brain about how computers and the chips and everything, because that's what he does from the very pioneering days. And how you can take on a little, you take sand and make it into these silicon boards, and then you make these transistors, and there's billions of these little transistors in one chip, billions of them. Incredible. And that's just some scientific people who don't have any real mystic powers. They just have some good intelligence, and they're dealing with the gross material energy. And we see what they're creating. Now, these yogis, through lifetimes of sadhana and yogic disciplines, they learned to actually tap into the energies of subtle matter, which is the background of gross matter. So they could change their form. They had the speed of mind. They were tapping into the very power of the crude state of ahankar or ego. They were superpowers beyond imagination. In Kali Yuga, people don't have these subtle scientific connections. So we think it must be some sort of mythology. But if you were to tell someone, even 100 years ago, about an iPhone,
and what it could do, they would say it is mythology.
It's just a matter of what we know how to do and what we don't know how to do. So these asuras were really powerful. Aristaksura, he was pounding the entire earth planet with his hooves.
Any woman in the radius of where he was having miscarriages if they were pregnant. He had more power in his body than the nuclear bombs that our scientists can create. And he was angry. His eyes were red. There was practically fire coming out of his nostrils. He was so mad. And he was running toward Krishna.
And Krishna's just standing with his arm on the shoulder of one of his friends. It's not like he got in some martial arts stance ready for the fight. He was just relaxing, holding a lotus flower in one hand with his arm on his friend. And he just said, come, come, you rascal. And he's just a tiny little boy, and this gigantic bull comes charging at him. And Krishna, just with his little hand, he didn't make his hands bigger. Just with his tiny little soft hands, he grabs on to the massive horns of this bull and flips him over and throws him. The bull just flies and hits the ground, and the earth is shaking. And he's more mad than ever. And he attacks Krishna with even more ferocious, violent motives. And then Krishna just flips him over again. And then with those little, soft, lotus feet, the gopis cry when Krishna goes to the pasture, thinking Krishna's feet are so soft. If you just touch them, they turn colors. Even the softest part of our bodies we feel might hurt him because they're so hard. His feet are so soft. That's how he appears for the gopis in Yashoda Mai. And with those same little feet, he kicked Aristasura. And they were millions of times more powerful than Indra's thunderbolt to Aristasura. And Krishna's not perspiring. He's not showing any anger. He's just kicking playfully like we kick a little ball. And Arista passes stool and urine. And that's quite embarrassing for somebody like that. Publicly. And he's vomiting blood and he dies. And Krishna does it in such a childlike, innocent, and sweet way, so much so that none of the Brijabasis think he's some superhero or god. They think Narayan must have blessed him. He's just our friend. He's just our lover. He's our child. The only time Krishna actually appeared to exert himself was Agasura. Because all the other asuras, he was just little Krishna. But for Agasura, he decided to expand himself very big to choke him because he was an 8-mile-long snake. This was a powerful mystic who assumed that form with a totally violent, malicious intent. His intent was to completely destroy the entire population of Vrindavan. If I kill Krishna and all his friends and all of his calves, everyone else will die of grief. And all the little friends see this
8-mile-long snake, and his mouth is open. And first they're thinking, maybe this is some plaything that has been arranged for us. So they started, they were little boys. They were still in charge of calves. That means they weren't even 10 years old yet. And they were joking and talking about him and dancing toward Agasura. And they finally came to a conclusion. Actually, this is not just some play piece for us. It's not a toy. This is actually a big, big demon who's come to kill us. But Krishna will save us. And smiling and laughing, they ran, they danced right into his mouth and looked at Krishna just before they went in. That's how fearless they were. And they didn't even know that Krishna's God. They didn't care if he's God. They just knew Krishna loved us. And Krishna's love can protect us from anything. He's just our little boy. He's vulnerable. If he's hungry, we'll do anything to give him some food. We don't want him to suffer. If lightning comes in the sky and he runs to his mother and cries, then she'll embrace him. But when a situation like this came, the little boys, it wasn't his power that they took shelter of. They just had total faith in his love. So they danced into the demon. And Krishna went in after they were all in. And the little calves who Krishna loved so much. And then the Agasura closes his mouth. It sounded much more scary than what I just did. And it's pitch dark. And there's no air. And all the gopas and the calves become unconscious. Like dead. Now, all the friends are unconscious. Nobody, even the demigods, could see what's happening inside. He's all alone. That's the only time he exhibited some opulence. He expanded himself really big. And choked Agasura so he couldn't breathe. Then the Atma, the soul of Agasura, comes bursting out from the top of his head as a light in the sky. And then his mouth opens. And Krishna glances upon all his limitless gopas and calves, and they all come to life just like they just had a nice sleep. They don't know what happened. Nobody knows what happened. Somehow or other, all of us know what happened. By the grace of Sukadev Goswami, Srila Prabhupada translated so we could read it. Krishna's so kind. He sees the potential in everyone. He sees the good. Because Agasura, even though he had such a demoniac intent to genocide, exterminate the entire Brijavasi race, because the children were so happy and blissful when they danced into his mouth, somehow or other, just at the moment of death, he was affected by the happiness of those children. And when Krishna came out of his mouth, his soul entered Krishna's body. And he was given spiritual perfection. Can you imagine? Scarier than Agasura is Kaliya. He's also a snake. He was gigantic, with hundreds of hoods. He was so poisonous Just his breathing made the waters that he was living in so venomous that the vapors from his breath in the waters, any bird that was anywhere near flying in the sky would drop dead. Every tree died. No life could survive anywhere near him. So cruel.
And Krishna's friends and the cows, they drank the water and they all died. So Krishna glanced upon them and brought them back to life. And they don't know what happened. They were just looking at each other. And then Krishna dove in and he started swimming around. And he was splashing. He's just a little boy, but he was splashing. And Kaliya was so insulted. Kind of like Krishna did to Indra. Whatever the offerings of puja that was meant for Indra, Krishna said, give them to the cows in Govardhan Hill and the Brahmins. He was really insulted. Well, Kaliya really had this complex of janasya moho yamaham mameti, I and mine. I am this body, and I am all-powerful. And all these women are mine, and all this property is mine, everything is mine. And nobody dared trespass. Krishna jumps in and is swimming around and splashing. He was infuriated. How insulting. You must die. From the waters emerges this enormous, many-headed, super poisonous snake. His eyes were so red and so cruel, and his tongues were slithering in and out, and his fangs were gigantic. And he goes toward Krishna to bite him. And then he wraps his coils around Krishna. And Krishna, just to increase the love of all his devotees, he just looks like he's helpless in these coils. And the cowherd boys are fainting. And inauspicious omens started coming all over Vrindavan, and Nanda, Yashoda, and the elder cowherd men and cowherd ladies all came running to the spot. And they see their little Krishna helplessly in the coils of this enormous poisonous snake. This snake was bigger than the tallest buildings.
And he was squeezing Krishna.
Yashoda Mai wanted to fight the snake. But she knew she didn't have a chance, so she just decided to jump in the water. Either she dies, but she can't see what she's seeing. But Balaram stopped her. He stopped her from going in. And Nanda Maharaj and the cowherd men were going to go in and try to fight too, but they had no chance. Balaram stopped them all. And Yashoda Mai fell unconscious like a cow that just lost her calf, and the other gopis are trying to bring her back to consciousness. And then she opens her eyes and sees Krishna in this state. Heartbreaking.
Only Balaram understands the power of Krishna.
Balaram laughed quietly. Nobody could hear him. And he said, my younger brother Krishna is not in any danger. In my form of Anantashesha, he never plays with me like this. But look at how he's playing with this insignificant little water snake named Kaliya. So when Krishna saw all the Brijavasis, all the cows, all the calves, all the peacocks and all the birds and all the trees were literally on the verge of death. That's Krishna's Prananath. He's the Lord of their very life. Their love for Krishna is their only life. When Krishna's in danger, nothing could be worse. If it appears that Krishna is going to be killed, they cannot live. Krishna was in the coils for quite a long time. And they were suffering and suffering and suffering. But we learned through the science of bhakti that that suffering was not suffering. It was an intensified increasing of their love. Krishna was accepting that situation and putting his devotees in that condition to limitlessly increase the quality of their love. And their love increased to the point where they were at the verge of death. And then Krishna expanded himself a little, and Kaliya's coils increased, and he slipped out. And then he danced blissfully on the hoods of Kaliya. Now, we read about Narasingadeva and Hiranyakashipu. That was a big fight. But when Krishna was in the coils, he was just happily in the coils. And when it came to fight with Kaliya, he didn't use any chakras or swords or bows and arrows or clubs. He danced on him. And as he was dancing, it was so beautiful. The Brijavasis started singing songs for him to dance with. And the devas were playing drums and making beautiful ragas just for this occasion. Most beautiful. So when Krishna is just 7 years old and he's effortlessly lifting Govardhan Hill, and while he's doing so, he's facilitating the most sweet, intimate, loving exchanges with devotees. That is the uniqueness of Vrindavan. Krishna is displaying, he displays many, many great powers in various incarnations. But in Vrindavan, the supreme power that is in everything he does is his sweetness, his innocence. Because the sweetness and this innocence facilitates an ever-increasing intimacy of love with his devotees. Even on Kaliya, sometimes he would play his flute. When Krishna plays his flute, it's the love of his heart pouring in the form of beautiful music through his breath. And when it enters, the Yamuna River becomes motionless. The rocks and the stones start trembling and dancing. Srila Prabhupada explains, the little calves who are drinking the milk from their cows, they just become stunned and stop drinking. They're just holding their mother's udder in their little mouth, and tears are pouring from their eyes. And the gopis, they give Krishna's flute, the love of Krishna in the sound of his flute completely conquers their hearts and steals their entire being, their body, their mind, their words, their lives, they offer in love. And the peacocks, when they hear the flute, they begin to dance. And as they're dancing, the birds start singing and the flowers blossom. So limitless flowers on limitless trees are blossoming with such fragrance. And all moving and non-moving beings in Vrindavan, in the deepest, most profound, ecstatic state of samadhi, are reciprocating with Krishna's love, with their love. And Krishna appears as Govardhan. And in Govardhan, he, Haridas Varya, he teaches us what pleases him through his own service to all Krishna's loving devotees. 500 years ago, Lord Chaitanya performed the parikrama of Govardhan Hill. He began at Manasi Ganga. The story of that place, Kamsa sent another one of these extremely evil murderers to kill Krishna. Sometimes they appeared in the most gruesome, terrible forms. And sometimes, just to deceive, they appeared in different forms. So here is one of these really, really gigantic, powerful demons. He takes the form of a little calf named Vatsa. Vatsasura. And that little calf, he wanted to get Krishna and Balaram off guard. So one of the little calves didn't go out to the pastures that day. So this demon was so expert. He planned so strategically. He took on the exact qualities as one of Krishna's calves. And he was just so innocent, so sweet looking. But he was just waiting for the opportunity to kill. But Krishna knows everything. He told Balaram, "You see that little calf there? He's a demon." Balaram said, "I know." So, yeyatamam prapadyante tamstadaiva bhajamyaham. Krishna reciprocates according to how you want to approach him. So the calf was coming very secretly to get Krishna when he was least expecting it. So Krishna did the same thing. He was just kind of walking, you know. Walk behind the calf, and the calf is thinking, "Oh, he just thinks I'm a calf." And Krishna's just walking, and at the least expected moment, Krishna grabs his back legs and goes and swirls him around, and he whirls him around so fast that he dies of dizziness, and then he throws him. So the gopas, cowherd boys, here at Govardhan, where Krishna would herd cows with the cowherd boys, they said, "Krishna, how can we play with you? Because you killed a calf. A calf is a little baby cow. You're Gopal. You should go to the Ganges, to the Ganga, to purify yourself." They were joking. But Krishna took as an opportunity. We don't want to leave Vrindavan. Let Mother Ganga come here. So Krishna, in his mind, he meditated on Mother Ganga and invited her to come to Vrindavan. And by the power of Krishna's mind, Manasi Ganga,
A beautiful lake, one of the largest lakes in all of Braj Bhumi. And in those days, it was a huge lake filled with the pure original water of Ganga.
So Krishna and the gopas were having so much fun bathing and playing and drinking water from Ganga. And one day some Brahmins were telling Nanda Maharaj, Upananda, Abhinanda, Sunanda, Nanda, and Ananda Maharaj, that some stories from the scriptures, the glories of Ganga Devi. They explained that once Garuda, the bird carrier of Vishnu, captured a snake with his claws. And as he was flying with the snake, the tip of the tail of the snake happened to touch the water of Ganga. And because that water was so pure, the snake manifested a four-arm form of an eternal associate of Lord Narayan from Vaikuntha. And when Garuda saw that snake became a four-arm devotee, Garuda put that personality on the top of his back and became his carrier and directly took him to Vaikuntha for eternal liberation. So the gopas were thinking, we should bathe in the Ganga. So they were packing their ox carts ready for their trips. And Krishna says, where are you going? They say, we're going to Himalayas. We're going to the Ganga to take bath. We heard this story. And Krishna said, there's no need to leave Vrindavan because Ganga's here. They said, what do you mean Ganga's here? He said, come and I'll show you. And he brought them to Manasi Ganga. And they were saying, this is just a lake. How is this Ganga? And Krishna smiled. And right before their eyes, from the water emerged Mother Ganga, riding on her celebrated crocodile carrier. And she smiled and confirmed that I am here. And then all the cowherd men and all the gopis, they all bathed in the Ganga. And this happened around the time of Deepavali. So we offer lights, the appearance of Manasi Ganga. So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took his bath there to begin the parikrama of Govardhan. Then he went just a little up a hill to the temple of Haridev. The story is that Govardhan was the springtime place of Krishna's Raslila with Sri Radha and gopis. So one time, Srimati Radharani and the gopis were waiting for Krishna. Yugayatam nameshena chakshusha prabhrushayatam sunyayatam jagat sarvam govinda virahename. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, in the mood of Sri Radha, is teaching us the depths of ecstatic love one can receive through the chanting of the holy names. Shikshastakam begins Cheto Dharapanamarjana. In our state, our hearts have become quite dirty places. When you look in a mirror, you're supposed to see yourself. But when the mirror is covered by generations of pollutions, all you see is pollution. And you think, that's me. In a similar way, the mind is like a mirror. It's supposed to reflect the seer, the eternal soul. Jivara Swarupoi Krishna Nitya Das. The soul is eternally a loving servant of Krishna. Nitya Siddha Krishna Prema Sajya Kabunha. Eternal love for Krishna is within. It's the nature of every soul. But when the soul looks through the mind in this world, it's supposed to see itself, it's supposed to see Krishna. But all we see is I'm a man and I'm a woman, I'm this color or that color, and I want this and I fear this. So much egoism, so much arrogance and depression, and all of these things we're seeing. But the chanting of the name cleanse, because Krishna is not different than his name. Nam nama kari bahuta nija sarva shaktis. Krishna has him, he's present in the name. He is the name. And all of his potencies, his beauty, his sweetness, his love can be realized in the name. Hare Krishna. And he has many names. Anandam Buddhivarajanam. It awakens the ecstasy of that love that we're all yearning for. And Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, through Shikshastakam, gives us such a synthesized, condensed explanation of the path of bhakti. It comes to the point where we don't want anything. Nadanam na janam na sundarim kavitam vaja gadisha kamaye mama janmani janmanishwara bhavathad bhakti rahoi tikitvai. I don't want wealth of the opposite sex, and I don't want fame, and I don't want power or prestige. I don't even want liberation from suffering. I only want to serve you, my Lord. I only want to please you, my Lord. And the verse just before this teaches us what we must understand and realize to even come to this point. Trinarapi sunichena taror ibasi hishnuna amanina manadena kirtaniya sadahari. If we actually want to develop that true aspiration for pure love, we have to aspire to be more humble than a blade of grass. Tolerant, forgiving, more than even a tree. Eager to offer all respect to others and not being plagued by the pathetic weakness of craving to be respected and honored. As long as that's there, we can't taste the sweetness of the name. We can't truly aspire for pure love. But if we're chanting the holy names with the right consciousness, with the right service attitude, with the right association, Ainanda Tanuja Kinkaram, our only ambition, our only aspiration is just to be a little particle of dust at the feet of Krishna. Yugayatam name. And then Lord Chaitanya is praying, when will my voice choke up when I chant the name? And when my hair stand on end? And when will tears like torrents of rivers flow from my eyes? And in separation from you, Krishna, I'm feeling a moment to be a yuga. Because it's hard for us to imagine what a yuga is. Sometimes it's translated as 12 years or more. That's love on the spiritual level. That means Krishna is manifesting so profound and so personal and so genuinely in our hearts in those feelings of separation. So as the gopis were on the banks of Manasi Ganga waiting for Krishna, a moment was like 12 years or more. And they, Srimati Radharani and gopis were all having kirtan. They were chanting, Hari Dev, Hari Dev, Hari Dev, Hari Dev. And suddenly, a murti of Krishna, as a little 7-year-old boy lifting Govardhan Hill, appeared right in their midst. And they named him Hari Dev. And they could see that this murti is Krishna. This is Krishna's body. This is Krishna's personality. This is Krishna that has come in the form of this wonderful murti. And they offered the water of Manasi Ganga. And they offered flowers and fruits. And they chanted and they danced. And they offered their hearts and their lives. And this became a worshipable deity for the gopis of Vrindavan. After 4,500 years, Srimati Radharani, in the form of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, returned to Haridev Temple. And when he saw this beautiful form, tears pouring from his eyes in love, his arms raised, he danced ecstatically while chanting the holy names. And all the villagers from all directions started coming because they heard this beautiful personality filled with love is singing kirtan. And he induced all the Brijavasis of the neighborhoods to chant and dance with him in the presence of Sri Hari Dev. And then he took rest that night. And at Brahmakund, just near Manasi Ganga, Balabhadra Bhattacharya, his assistant, personally cooked for him. Brahmakund is the kund where Lord Brahma, filled with his tears and brought water for the bathing of Krishna during the Abhishek after the Govardhan Leela. Speaking of Govardhan Leela, Govardhan Puja was 2 days ago, so I'm going to make a calculation. According to Srimad Bhagavatam and our Acharyas, on the Amavasya is Deepavali. On the first day of the waxing moon is Govardhan Puja. That's where Krishna arranged that wonderful purification for Indra. And they made the mountains and mountains and mountains of prasad all the way. It was several miles from Anior all the way to around here. Just massive mountains, Anukuta Kshetra. And then on that day, Krishna manifested right on top of Govardhan Hill. And he, in an enormous form, he ate all the offerings and brought it back as prasad. Then on Krishna's instructions, they gave prasad to everybody who was assembled, and they worshipped the cows, and they circumambulated Govardhan Hill, and everyone was happy. And the next day was the day when it celebrated the relationship between Yamaraj and Yamuna, his sister. And on that day, it's a day when the sisters perform puja for the prosperity and the happiness of their brothers. So Krishna and Balaram went together, and many of their sisters, cousin sisters, the daughters of Upananda, Abhinanda, and they were doing giving prasad and doing pujas and singing songs, and it was loving reciprocation between Krishna and his cousin sisters. That was the second day. And the third day, because Indra was kind of waiting for something, nothing was offered to him in 2 days. That's when he got mad. And that's when he poured down the reins. So according to my calculation, Govardhan Puja was the day before yesterday. Yesterday, Krishna celebrated on bank of the Yamuna with his sisters. And today is the day that he lifted Govardhan. And the next 7 days that we're here, he's still going to be holding Govardhan. If you have the eyes to see. But in spiritual life, we see through our ears. We see through the words of the scriptures and the words of the true saints. So through these stories, and through mercy and grace, we have the faith by which we can see it in our hearts. We could feel it. We could be in that Leela even now. Manasi Ganga, just on one side is Chakreshwar Mahadev. The scriptures tell us that when Krishna was lifting Govardhan Hill for those 7 days, all Krishna's, so many people wanted to help Krishna. The cowherd men were holding the sticks underneath, thinking, I'm helping Krishna. And the gopis were glancing at Krishna, energizing with their love, we're helping Krishna. And Yashoda Mai was feeding little cakes in Krishna's mouth, thinking, I'm giving Krishna energy. And Sudarshan wanted to help. So with Krishna's blessings, he was twirling around above Govardhan Hill, and he was evaporating most of the water that Indra was pouring down through these Samvartika clouds. And after the 7 days, Sudarshan Chakra understood there is no place in all of existence more dear to the Supreme Personality of Godhead than Vrindavan. And he was witness to this pastime as he was doing his seva. And he asked permission, I want to eternally reside here at Govardhan. So Krishna gave him a place right at Manasi Ganga, which is called Chakratirtha. And Bhadranab, Krishna's great-grandson, established a temple of Lord Shiva there. In Mathura, Bhuteshwar Mahadev. In Kamyavan, Kameshwar Mahadev. In Vrindavan, Gopeshwar Mahadev. And at Govardhan, Chakaleshwar Mahadev. And Sanatan Goswami, he lived right in the banks of Manasi Ganga. For some time, he had his bhajan kutir. May I speak something about Sanatan Goswami? During these yatras, there's really no beginning or end, so I'm just going to talk. Rupan Sanatan Goswami and their younger brother Anupam. They were born in the Saraswat Brahmin community. And through various generations from Karnataka, their families were living in Bengal. And Sanatan, when he was very young, he had a dream. In the dream, a effulgent, very beautiful Brahmin presented to him the Srimad Bhagavatam. Then he woke up from the dream, and he had a whole library of books, and he was looking, but he didn't have a Srimad Bhagavatam. So he was really anxious. Lonelyam, he was eager to read the Srimad Bhagavatam. So eager. He was praying for that Srimad Bhagavatam. And that very day, someone came to his door. It was the exact same Brahmin that he saw in the dream. And he gave him a Srimad Bhagavatam. From that day, Srimad Bhagavatam became the very life and soul of Sanatana Goswami. He and Rupa Goswami, they would read it and read it and read it. Their whole life revolved around the Srimad Bhagavatam, which culminates in Sri Radha's pure love for Krishna and Krishna's pure love for all living beings. As they grew, they were so intelligent, so expert, so loved by everyone, that the king, the Mughal king, the Nawab Hussein Shah, he heard about them. Because he wanted to go out and conquer lands. But he needed somebody who would, or they needed, he needed them to come and rule over his kingdom with him. Because everybody would listen to them, because they were so kind and so gracious, so expert. So he made them the prime minister and home minister. And they only did it to somehow or other subdue his persecution of the innocent followers of the Vedic system. And he was so proud of them. He was so grateful to them. He made them his brothers and shared all his wealth with them. He built them magnificent palaces equal to his own practically, gave them large tracts of land, gave them enormous wealth, prestige, power, everything. But all they wanted is Krishna. They just loved to read Srimad Bhagavatam and chant the names of Krishna. They wanted to go to Vrindavan. They felt so guilty. And once Sanatana Goswami had a dream where this incredible personality appeared. He was a sannyasi with a beautiful golden complexion. And when Sanatana Goswami saw Lord Gauranga in his dream, he gave his heart to him. And Lord Gauranga smiled and told him, "You should go to Vrindavan." At the right time. So he woke up from the dream and told Rupa Goswami, and Rupa Goswami said, "I heard that this Lord Gauranga, who is Krishna himself, we understand from scriptures who he is. He's living in Jagannath Puri." So they were writing letters to Lord Chaitanya, asking what they should do. "We seem to be trapped in this lamentable condition of, but we just want Krishna. We want to serve. So they wrote so many letters and never got any reply. And finally, they got a reply. And it basically told them, just carry on with what you're doing. Don't be attached. Just be attached to Krishna. And in due course, he will give his mercy. And sometime later, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, on his first attempt to go to Vrindavan, he came with hundreds and thousands of people to Ramakeli performing Nam Sankirtan. And Nawab Husain Shah, the king, who hated Hindus, who outlawed any public practice of any Hindu ritual, Lord Chaitanya came dancing right into the very capital of his kingdom while he was there with hundreds and thousands of people very loudly chanting. King asked one of his assistants, what is this noise I'm hearing? The person explained, this beautiful golden person. I don't know who he is, but I've never seen anything like it. He's so beautiful. He has large arms that extend below his knees. His complexion is golden, and his eyes, which are like lotus petals that seem to be extending to his ears, they're pouring rivers of tears as he's chanting God's names. And hundreds and hundreds and thousands of people are surrendering their lives, their fortunes, their everything to him. And they're all chanting the names of Hari. We've never seen anything like this. Sometimes he jumps up and sometimes he falls to the ground in ecstasy and rolls around and then jumps and chants and induces everyone to chant. And I see everyone is in the ecstasy of love of God. We don't know who he is. That's all. Nawab Husain Shah, he called one Keshav Chatri, I think his name was. He was a devotee, actually, but he was one of his ministers. He said, tell me, who is this sannyasi that has come? And this person was afraid if he said anything, that Nawab Husain Shah was so violent and so hateful and so arrogant that if he told him what was really going on, he was afraid he would send his armies to attack. So he said, nothing, nothing. It's all rumors. There's just a sannyasi, a simple little sannyasi. He's come to town. He's not much doing anything. People are making rumors about him. Don't worry about it. You know what Nawab Husain Shah said? He said, why are you committing offense? I have to pay people so much money to do anything for me. Or else I have to threaten them with fear to surrender to what I'm saying. But this sannyasi, he's not paying anybody, anyone. He's not causing anyone any fear. And everyone's surrendering their body, their minds, their words, their lives, their souls to him. And he's so beautiful and he's always weeping in ecstasy. I can understand he's the one God. And you're calling him just an ordinary beggar. You are making a great offense. And the king proclaimed, this sannyasi who is chanting and dancing, he could go anywhere and do anything he wants, and he has my full support. So all day this chanting and dancing was going on. And finally some devotees arranged Lord Chaitanya to stop. And if you go to Ramakeli, there is a tamal tree and a kadamba tree. in a little secluded place.
And Lord Chaitanya was sitting there around midnight, and Rupa and Sanatan disguised themselves incognito along with their brother Anupam. And they secretly went to Lord Chaitanya. First they approached Lord Nityananda Prabhu and Haridas Thakur, because they understood we cannot approach the Supreme Lord directly. It's only by the mercy of their devotees. Nityananda Prabhu is Guru Tattva. And Haridas Thakur, even though he was born in what society considered an untouchable family, because of his deep attachment to the holy names, Lord Chaitanya proclaimed him the Nam Acharya, the Acharya of the whole world for all time to come, for the Yuga Dharma of the chanting of Krishna's holy names. With the blessings of Thakur Haridas and Prabhu Nityananda, they brought the three brothers to where Lord Chaitanya was sitting on the ground. And all three of them, they offered their prostrated obeisances before the Lord. And they were weeping in humility. Lord Chaitanya had to pick them up. And they offer prayers. Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita describes these prayers. First, they were glorifying you. You are the Supreme Lord who has descended into this world to deliver the most fallen. But wherever you may go, you will not find anyone more fallen than us. We are so degraded. We are so sinful. We are so low. We have no right to even approach you. What is the chances of a little tiny dwarf to touch the moon with his finger? We have less chance than that. But still, you are Patita Pavana. You are the deliverer of the most fallen. Therefore, we have no one else to turn to. You delivered Jagai and Madhai. They were murderers and thieves, and they were always intoxicated, and they were raping people, and they were so malicious. But they were from Brahmin families, and you induced them to chant the holy names. So it wasn't so difficult for you to deliver them. But we are more fallen than Jagai and Madhai, because Jagai and Madhai never became the servants of very, very sinful, exploitive persons like we have. They were crying, begging for mercy. As long as there's pride in our heart, we cannot beg for mercy. To the degree we're really humble, we really don't think we deserve, we can beg. And it is that humility alone that actually tunes us into the frequency of Krishna's grace. As they were speaking, Lord Chaitanya started to cry. That means they weren't just saying it out of fashion or out of poetry. They meant it. They felt it to the core of their heart what they were speaking. Lord Chaitanya said, "Stop. Your humility is breaking my heart." And Lord Chaitanya spoke. He said, "I've received your letters. And I could understand what is your character, what is your behavior, and what is your motives.
You brothers have been my servants always. Lord Chaitanya placed his lotus feet on the top of the heads of Rupa and Sanatana. And he gave them at that time the names. Your name will be Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami. And I accept you as my own. They advised Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, better you don't go to Vrindavan with such large crowd of people. This is very instructive right now. Better you just go alone or with one other. Then you could really experience Vrindavan nicely. Because Lord Chaitanya was not with 5,000 people. He was with millions of people by that time. So, at Kanai Natashala, Lord Chaitanya decided to return to Puri. And soon after, he began with just Balabhadra Bhattacharya on his next journey to Vrindavan Dham. Meanwhile, Sanatana Goswami and Rupa Goswami, they brought some really good Brahmins. And they had a teacher. Sanatana Goswami had a teacher who was studying him bhakti according to the Srimad Bhagavat. And I'll go a little before Lord Chaitanya came. I would just like to add, while they were performing all their government services so excellently, Nawab Hussain and Shah just went out with armies conquering more and more land, and Rupa and Sanatana were running the whole kingdom. He was depending on them. But at the same time, they were so Krishna conscious that with their wealth, they built what they called Gupta Vrindavan, secret Vrindavan. They made a Kadamba Kanana, a Kadamba forest, a Radha Kund, a Shama Kund, a Giri Govardhan. They had a temple of Madan Mohan. They had the different Leela stans, or places of Krishna's Leela, that they put in the forest. And in this way, away from Vrindavan, they were meditating on Vrindavan, chanting the names of the Lord, discussing the Lord, praying to the Lord, loving the Lord with devotional service. And they built beautiful, beautiful assembly houses. And they would invite scholars and Vaishnavas and sadhus to come to discuss scriptures. And they built beautiful homes on the bank of the Ganges for all their guests. Bhakti Ratnakar tells that when they were sitting in the assembly of the greatest scholars of the whole area, they looked like Indra in a court of demigods. Rupa and Sanatana, their physical features were the essence of beauty. They were the greatest scholars in the world of Sanskrit, Persian, Bengali. They knew the scriptures. They were poets. They were billionaires. Everyone loved them. Even though they were ruling a kingdom, it explains, they were never harsh. They never insulted anyone. People would do anything they asked them to do because they had confidence that Rupa and Sanatana loved them so much. Can you imagine a ruler like that? And could you imagine how valuable they were to the Nawab Hussain Shah? They kept everything so good. But they were always longing to escape. So after Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu blessed them, Lord Chaitanya went back to Puri. And when he went back to Puri, he gathered all his devotees around him. And he said, I just met these two brothers, Rup and Sanatan. They have wealth like Indra. They have such beauty. They have such power, such fame, such knowledge. But yet, they have no ego. They think themselves the most fallen people in the world. Seeing such humility in such qualified people, irresistibly, I bestowed my full mercy upon them. Lord Chaitanya, as if he had five mouths, he was glorifying the qualities of Rupa and Sanatana. And in doing so, Mahajano Yena Gatasa Bhanta, he's teaching all of us what is actually valuable in our life, what we should really aspire for. So they had these very pure-hearted Brahmins and priests doing so many pujas to free them from all of their material entanglements. And then Rupa Goswami, he left along with his brother Anupam and started giving away all his wealth to proper sources. And he wrote a letter to Lord Chaitanya's secretary in Puri. And he got the message that Lord Chaitanya is going to Vrindavan. So Rupa Goswami had left. Sanatana Goswami still had to stay back to do some things. But Rupa Goswami sent a letter and said, I've sent 10,000 golden coins for you to help you get out of there. And Lord Chaitanya, I just got a message. He's on his way to Vrindavan. So we're going to Vrindavan. So you come to Vrindavan and meet us in Vrindavan town. And Rupa Goswami left. And Sanatana Goswami, he just lost all interest. And he sent a letter to the king that I'm sick. My health isn't good. I can't come to my services. So the king couldn't really rule the kingdom without him. So he sent some doctor, go make him better. And the doctor came back to the king and said, the king said, how is he? Is he getting better? He said, there's nothing wrong with him. He's just surrounded by these devotees reciting Srimad Bhagavatam all day. The king was furious. The king himself came. And he saw Sanatana Goswami just blissfully studying Srimad Bhagavatam with the Vaishnavas. And the king said, "What? You are my brother and I have to go out and conquer and rule and I need you. And how could you do this?" And Sanatana Goswami said, "You can do anything you like with me, but I resign." So he was put in prison. If you go to Ramakali, that prison cell is still there. It's like an underground, dark cell with no nice ventilation. In the service of the Lord, he accepted that place. But by his really good intelligence, and I'm not going to go into too many details, he convinced the prison guard to release him. And now he's a fugitive. And he's with his assistant, and they're going through some of the most dangerous jungles filled with dacoits and thieves and killers and ferocious lions and everything and tigers, and they're going somehow or other trying to escape. And when he found out that his servant had some money, one coin, he said, "You go back." He didn't want anything. And he was on his way to Vrindavan. And in Varanasi, he met Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Lord Chaitanya was returning from Vrindavan when Sanatana Goswami arrived on the bank of the Ganga at the
Mani karne ka ghat.
And Lord Chaitanya instructed him in the science of pure braj bhakti, pure devotional service, for 2 continuous months on the bank of the Ganga. And then he sent Sanatana Goswami, I'm going to Puri, you go to Vrindavan. And there I want you to establish temples, rediscover the ancient original deities, excavate and reveal the holy places, and extract the very essence of all scriptures, the pure love of Vrindavan, and compile books. Sanatana Goswami came, he met Subhuti Rai, and had a tour of all the 12 forests of Vrindavan. And then he was called to meet Lord Chaitanya in Puri. And on the way he drank some bad water and got terrible infections all over his body. They were itching and they were scratching and they were oozing and they were really terrible. And they were getting worse and worse. And he was thinking, we're not going to get past Manasi Ganga on this parikrama. That what is the use of my life? During Ratha Yatra, in the presence of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and all of his associates, in the presence of Lord Jagannath, while everyone's chanting the holy name, I will place my body under the wheel of the chariot and end this useless body. And when he came to Puri, he stayed at the kutir of Haridas Thakur. And the first day he came, Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu arrived. And he embraced Sanatana Goswami. And the pus and the blood and the infections all smeared on Lord Chaitanya's body. And Lord Chaitanya said, even without Sanatana revealing his thoughts, he said, you have no right to destroy another man's property. You have given your life to me, therefore your body is my property. You have no right to destroy it. And for almost a year, Sanatana Goswami was being embraced by Lord Chaitanya every day as his sores were getting worse and worse. And ultimately, Lord Chaitanya embraced him once more, and he became completely healthy and cured. And Lord Chaitanya sent him to perform his seva in Vrindavan. And Sanatana Goswami lived in Vrindavan for the rest of his life. The Madan Gopal Temple, or Madan Mohan, was discovered by Advaitacharya under the Advaitavat. It was being worshipped in Gokul Mahavan. And Sanatana Goswami would see this little boy playing and dancing, and he followed him, and he went into the temple, and he saw the little boy became the deity. And ultimately, Krishna came to Sanatana Goswami, Dvadasaditya Teal, and later, a wealthy person came and built the beautiful temple in the service of Sanatana Goswami. And Sanatana would wander throughout Brajbhumi, from village to village. He was so kind. He had such compassion. Everyone loved him. He just loved Krishna and cared about everyone. He would go to a village and all the whole village would come to the outskirts to greet him. They were so happy. They were waiting for this throughout the year. When will Sanatana come? And when he would come, they would all be there to greet him. And some would touch his feet and some would... He was their father. He was their brother. He was their friend. He was their son. He was their everything. He would embrace them. And they'd sit him down and bring him the best grains that they grew all year and the best milk products and feed him. And he would do Krishna Katha. But part of his Krishna Katha was, how are your cows? And how is your wife? And how is your husband? And how is your children? And what happened with this problem you told me last time? And he was just there for him. And he cared about every detail of their life. He was their guru. And he'd usually stay one day. And then the next morning when he would be leaving, the whole village would come to see him off. And they'd all be crying, begging, please come back soon. And then he'd leave. And when he would arrive at the next village, everybody would be there to greet him, celebrating, dancing. And when he would leave the next day, they would all be crying and begging him to come back soon. And there's one village called Baitan, where the villagers were, the Brijavasis were so deeply moved by attachment to Sanatana Goswami from the very hearts, that as he was leaving, they were crying and begging him, please stay 3 more days. So he stayed 3 more days. So that village is named after him staying. Once Sanatana Goswami was with Rupa Goswami. And Rupa Goswami was showing him some of his compositions. And Sanatana Goswami saw one particular description. It described the braids of Srimati Radharani to look like 2 black snakes. And Sanatana Goswami said, I don't think this is the right example to describe Srimati Radharani's the braids of her hair. And Rupa Goswami gave him the pages and said, well, whatever analogy you think is more appropriate, you write. So he was thinking about it. And he was at a place called Govinda Ghat. And he saw some really sweet little girls bathing in Govinda Ghat. And they were laughing and they were smiling and they were talking all things little girls talk. And suddenly he saw black snake right behind one of these little girls about to attack them. And Sanatana Goswami started screaming out, little girls, there's a snake behind you. Move, go somewhere. And the little girls were just playing and smiling and just not even paying attention to what he was saying. And he was so worried about these little girls, he jumped in the water and was going to get that snake to protect them. And suddenly the snake disappeared and the girls looked at him and laughed and smiled and then they disappeared. So he went back to Rupa Goswami and said, your example is perfect. Another time Rupa Goswami, who considered Sanatana Goswami his guru, he wanted to make some nice kheer for him. Sweet rice. Sadhus call param anna, the supreme food. But he didn't have anything. He was doing madhukari, and this beautiful little girl came with some rice and milk and said, here, Swamiji, give this to your brother. So as they were eating it, it was so full of nectar. Just by tasting it, their hearts were
flooding over with ecstatic praying. Just by eating some kheer. Sanatana Goswami said, where did you get this? He said, a little girl gave it to me. And Sanatana Goswami said, well, who's this little girl? And he described, and Sanatana Goswami said, Srimati Radharani appeared. How could you accept service from Srimati Radharani? We are eternally the servant of the servant of the servant of Sri Radhika. And you have accepted service from her. He was chastising Rupa Goswami. But as he was chastising, he kept eating the kheer. And he kept crying in ecstasy and chanting the holy names. And Rupa Goswami was feeling so bad that I accepted service from Radharani. But at the same time, he kept drinking the kheer and the ecstasy. But this is a very, very important message. Practically the whole world worships the Supreme Lord asking for favors. Give me money. Give me health. Give me good wife. Give me obedient children. Give me power. Help me conquer my competitors. Or give me liberation from suffering. But the standard of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is taught by the Goswamis. Is we don't want to take anything from Krishna. Krishna, how can I please you? How can I serve you? One time, Sanatana Goswami was on the banks of Pavan Sarovar. And he was in the sun. This is at Nandagaon. And a little cowherd boy came up to him and said, it's breaking my heart to see you suffer the way you live. You're sleeping on the hard ground every night. You're under different trees every day. You're in the hot sun. You're in the cold winters. It's breaking my heart to see you like this. Please build a little house, bhajan kutir, for yourself. And that will make me so happy and relieved. And he gave Sanatana Goswami some nice milk and prasad. And then the little cowherd boy left. And afterward, Sanatana Goswami understood that was Krishna. Krishna disguised himself and I didn't even recognize. But now I know. He realized that. And I'm hurting Krishna by living out in the open like this. So for Krishna's pleasure, on the banks of Pavan Sarovar, he built a nice little simple bhajan kutir to live in. So even this was the standard of the six Goswamis. Not Krishna, what will you do for me? Krishna, what can I do for you? The gopis only want to be beautiful because Krishna will be pleased. In Vrindavan, all the Brijavasis, whatever they do, whatever they say, is simply for Krishna's pleasure. And Krishna's pleased when we give pleasure to those he loves, the devotees. Krishna's pleased when we show compassion for the fallen souls in this material world. So it's that selfless spirit of service that is revealed in such depth in this simple little story of Sanatana Goswami drinking sweet rice. Sanatana was living on the banks of Manasi Ganga near Chakaleshwar Mahadev. And he was writing these, so many of his books, his commentary on Srimad Bhagavatam, the Brihad Bhagavatamrita, and other such literatures. And he wasn't sleeping at night more than an hour and a half. He was doing seva, chanting, hearing, praying, writing, meditating.
And at one time, the mosquitoes were so ferocious, it was distracting him. So for his service, he decided the next day he would leave that place. But Mahadev, Lord Shiva, who was so attached to the association of Sanatan Goswami, appeared as a Brahmin and said, "Sanatan, it appears that you're going somewhere." And he said, "Yes, too many mosquitoes." He said, "Just stay one more night. No more mosquitoes. Just stay." So Sanatan, just to please this person, he stayed. And meanwhile, Mahadev, he called upon the demigod who rules over all mosquitoes. And he told them, "Manasi Ganga, protect Sanatana Goswami." And that night, miraculously, there wasn't a single mosquito. So Sanatana Goswami remained there. And in the very elder years of his life, he spent much time in his bhajan kutir near Govardhan Hill. And every day he would do parikrama. There's the parikrama that most of us do, which is about 12 miles, 14 miles. And then there's the larger parikrama that goes Chandra Sarovar and all of those places, Paita. That's about 24 miles. He would do that every day, along with all of his other services. And when he was very old, it was very difficult, but still he was doing. And one day a little cowherd boy came to him. He was Krishna. And he said, "Sanatan, it breaks my heart to see you doing this parikrama every day. You don't have to do it. You're old." And Sanatan Goswami said, No, this is my rule. This is my regulated life." And the little boy climbed to the top of Govardhan Hill and brought down a Govardhan Shila. And that little boy brought the Shila with his own hands to Sanatan Goswami's bhajan kutir. And Sanatan Goswami looked, and in that stone was Krishna's footprint. And the footprints of Krishna's cows and calves, and even Krishna's little cowherd stick. And the little boy said, "You circumambulate this Govardhan Shila, and I will accept you have done the entire Govardhan Parikrama." That was Krishna. For Krishna's satisfaction, Sanatana Goswami performed his Govardhan Parikrama in that simple way. He would circle it 7 times. And on Guru Purnima, one year, when everyone would come, the Brijvasis, to worship Sanatana Goswami, they found he was sitting in his bhajan. He looked like he was in deep samadhi, and they waited. But then they realized that his soul had departed from his physical form. All the Goswamis of Vrindavan, all the Brijabasis, they all came. The entire Braj Bhumi was submerged in love and separation. Their guru, their friend, their brother, their father, he had left. There was a glorious celebration. And in honor of Sanatan Goswami on Guru Purnima, everyone would circle, even to this day, of all days of the year, so many people come to do the parikrama of Govardhan Hill and Guru Purnima in honor of Sanatan Goswami. So we will continue the parikrama. In Manasi Ganga, Jiva Goswami describes in Gopal Champu the boat pastimes that Krishna would have with gopis. Because Manasi Ganga was a very large lake at that time, and the gopis would come, and in order for them to return to their homes, they would have to cross the lake, and Krishna would arrange only one boatman, and that was him in disguise. And the sweetness, the love, the humor of these wonderful pastimes that Krishna and Sri Radha and the gopis would have on the boat completely enchant the heart. The day after tomorrow, you will all be doing the Govardhan Parikrama. And tomorrow is the disappearance day of His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. So I want to end a little early tonight so that we could all be very well-rested and full of enthusiasm, gratitude, and devotion for tomorrow. I believe Shyamananda Prabhu will give announcements after Damodarastakam, explaining what the program will be. There will be cooking a glorious feast for Srila Prabhupada, which I think perhaps all of you are invited to help. And then there'll be wonderful heartfelt offerings. There will be the Guru Puja for Srila Prabhupada in the early afternoon. And then a feast in his honor. And then in the evening, there will be a very special program. Perhaps several of Srila Prabhupada's very intimate, beloved disciples will speak about their remembrances, their appreciations of Srila Prabhupada. And this day is very important for us. Srila Prabhupada, in 1922, when he was just a very young man who was just recently married and had a child, met his guru, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Who requested him to take the message of Lord Chaitanya of pure devotional service to the whole world in the English language. And from that first meeting, he took that instruction as his life and soul and prepared his whole life, even while raising his family. But when he retired from his family life, he eventually moved here to Vrindavan. And for many years, he prepared himself by translating the first canto and writing commentaries for the Srimad Bhagavatam. And 50 years from now, from this year, He departed from Vrindavan for Mumbai, Calcutta. He went to Mayapur to his Guru's Samadhi, his Guru Maharaj's Samadhi, for blessings. And then he boarded the cargo ship Jaladuta and began his mission. He traveled around the world over 10 times. Srila Prabhupada left Calcutta with 40 rupees that could not be exchanged anywhere outside of India. He was staying in a ghetto area, the Bowery of New York City, with no one and nothing. And today, 50 years later, hundreds and thousands of devotees, hundreds and hundreds of temples, hundreds of millions of books published and distributed, billion plates of prasad practically distributed. And thousands of people coming at a time to visit his home in Vrindavan. What an incredible story. A little man who leaves at the age of 70 with nothing except compassion and love and wanting nothing for himself. After traveling the world and conquering the illusions in countless hearts and establishing pure devotional service as the ultimate truth, in 1977 he came back to Vrindavan. And in the temple he established, Krishna Balaram Temple, surrounded by his loving disciples from all over the world, crying in gratitude and love, chanting the holy names, dedicating their every aspect of their life to help him. In that beautiful setting, the month of Kartik, Sri Vrindavan Dham, like Sanatana Goswami, Srila Prabhupada departed from this mortal world. But he told us that wherever you're trying to follow my instructions, I am personally present with you. In separation, we can have the deepest relationship with Krishna. In separation, we can have the deepest relationship with Srila Prabhupada. All of us. Tomorrow is that one special day of the year when we really focus on sharing that love in separation for Srila Prabhupada. Here in the most holy land of Vrindavan at Govardhan Hill. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada told devotees once when he was leaving a place and he didn't know if he would ever return. He said, if you are chanting Hare Krishna and I am chanting Hare Krishna, we are always together. Nothing, no geographical boundaries, not even time itself can separate us if we are united in the holy names. So let us, in this spirit, chant together.